through interaction
members,
such a family and friends will be too. That's right. And sometimes there are some people who prefer Salatul Rahim with strangers rather than the close ones. I mean, for example, in terms of leveling or giving grades or becomes a degree to the families and the relatives, they prefer their friends to their parents or close relatives. Is it okay in Islam?
No, not. You know, our first duty, your first response, Rahim, Salat Rahim. Rahim means the person who is related to you as a relative. Mm-hmm. You know, that is Rahim.
Okay.
And that is why, of course, if you care about your friends, if you, for example, support and help other people, strangers, as you mentioned, that's also good. But it doesn't mean that you, for example, forget about your relatives, you forget about your parents, brothers, sisters, their, for example, uncles, cousins, like that. No, that's not true. But of course, again, it does not mean that if you care about your own relatives, you should not care about anyone else. No, that we do not say such as well. If you can, of course, you can be supportive and helpful to them. But the priority goes to your relatives, your close relatives, particularly parents.
That's all right. Yes. And this is in terms of the individual level. What about the facts of Salatul Rahim in terms of the social and communal level, Shaykh?
You know, it will have very good impact, not only on you yourself, on your family, rather on your society, on your community, on your relatives. Because, you know, if we actually increase the number of people among our relatives who are supportive, who are helpful, who are always caring about each other, you know, in such a community, in such a society, you will have very good people, very good community, very good society. They are always taking care of each other. They are always looking after each other. They are always trying to support each other with what they need. For example, sometimes one of the community member is sick badly,
yes,
and he needs support. Of course, he himself lonely cannot do anything to cure, to heal, for example, that sickness.
Okay.
If here we have, for example, people, relatives who are caring about Silatul Arham and they support these, look what a beautiful, what a nice, what a blessed kind of action it could be in the society.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it will have lots of rewards, not only for the person who is performing Silatul Arham, rather for all the members of that community. And of course, it decreases the level of, for example, sins, the levels of dangers and harms to that society and that community.
Yes.
That's why it's really recommended to be always supportive of our families, of our relatives. Do not cut our ties or relationship with these family members and relatives.
That's right. But unfortunately, in today's world, because of the new technologies, I mean, all these cell phones, mobile phones, social media, you know, even the people when they are together in a party or something, they are busy with the social media rather than Salatul Rahim. So, I mean, Salatul Rahim is not necessarily mean just to meet someone. It is to sit down with someone, talk to them, talk about and ask them about their situation, if they need any help, isn't it? Does Islam have any particular Islamic recommendation for us when we are doing Salatul Rahim or pay visit to someone?
Yes, if you can pay visit, if you can support, if you can donate sometimes or give something to our relatives who are in need, you know?
Yes.
That is the best thing.
Okay.
That is the best blessing.
So means sitting down with them and asking them about their needs is okay.
Go and visiting them and seeing their house, their facilities, furnitures, what they have. Then you might be able to help them, to support them, either directly, indirectly, whatever mean is possible for you. And then, of course, that would be the best thing. But since, as you rightly mentioned, nowadays people are so much busy, they do not have such time. We see that sometimes in Western countries, the people tell us that sometimes for many months, sometimes for many years, we are not able to visit each other. And unfortunately, this is the situation that people have. But of course, our recommendation, our suggestion is that try as much as you could, at least with your close relatives, try not to cut your ties, your relationship. That is really recommended. The only exception that is in Islam we have that you can cut completely your ties, let's say your communication, your contact with your relatives, is in that case that they completely become kafir. They completely become mushrik.
Yes.
they completely become mu'anid, what is termed that they are, for example, totally against and opposed Islam, opposed Iman, opposed, let's say, your religion. In that case, of course, there's no need to continue any kind of communication with them, as it is mentioned in the story of Prophet Ibrahim, alayhi salatu wasalam, that first Prophet Ibrahim tried to ask forgiveness for his uncle, Adar, but once he understood that no, he is the enemy of God, then he cut completely any kind of relationship with this close relative. That's why, yes, it is mentioned in the Holy Quran, but for the rest of the relatives, rest of the arham, or let's say people of your community and your relatives, there is a very high recommendation to continue this kind of contact with them.
And because of the development of the modern cities and the concept of urbanization, we could see that a new concept of the family, which is called nuclear family, you know, is established. It is very much different from the concept of extended family, which was in the past. We know that even in the past, the people used to pay a visit to their neighbors on the daily or weekly basis according to Islamic teachings, and the houses were made in a way that the neighbors even could visit each other every day. Nowadays, you know, in these blocks of the apartments, surrounded by the walls, even we can't say they are close to each other, but at the same time far from each other. And as I said, the modern technology has also aggravated the situation. That's why even orphanage houses, retirement houses, we can say, unfortunately, that's right. The houses for taking care of the elderly are many, many nowadays. Even the children go and put their parents, their old parents, over there.
And leave them.
Leave them alone over there. And these all have negative social and individual levels, all of them.
If you have time, I want to mention some of the athar.
Very good.
Or the, the rewards of this, having a good kind of communication, supportive kind of relation with the relatives. You know, first of all, we should know that according to the ayat and ayat of the Holy Quran, we will have we will receive the support of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in our life if we have this kind of communication and contact with our relatives. It will save us from the bala, from the misfortunes.
Very good.
It will actually help us to cross the Sirat bridge in the hereafter. And it will help us to be forgiven by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is a kind of kafara, a recompense for our ma'asi, our sins. It will purify ourselves from sins. It will, you know, make up the poverty for us. It will help, it will cause the hajat or the needs that we have to be responded to, be or let's say du'as and prayers to be answered by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It has lots, it will help us to be with, let's say, kind of prosperous life, happy life. It provides us with real happiness, with real, let's say, prosperity in our life. It prolongs our life, you know. That's very good. It it helps us with the death. We will have a very easy, very, let's say, what we can say, comfortable kind of death at the end of life. It will save us from the bad kind of death. These are some of the rewards, some of the, let's say, results of being with good kind of communication and contact with the relatives.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of Salat al-Rahim, or meeting the close relatives. And for sure, in Islam and according to Islamic beliefs, the people are encouraged in order to meet their close relatives, take care of their parents and children, and Salat al-Rahim has its own positive individual and collective communal effects. It was very kind of you, Sheikh. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pouraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with the reporters.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the US-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protesters called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna march.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice, at least.
Representatives of Jewish organizations such as Not In Our Name stressed their continued solidarity with the Palestinian struggles. Organizers said all Austrians must continue to protest against the US-Israeli genocide and their government support for it, despite the repression.
We cannot call ourselves humans, regardless of our nationalities or political views or religions, and be indifferent about what's going on nowadays in Gaza.
Thousands marched in the Austrian capital Vienna in support of the people and the resistance in Gaza as the Israeli genocide war claims more civilian lives. Despite Austria's repression, the state and the police were unable to stop the Palestine solidarity movement. Saturday's demonstration has once again shown that the support for Gaza remains strong in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying the resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war.
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives, except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the Alliance of Resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
لكن لما بنحكي بالمعطيات
based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international and economic information we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian revolution had said during the first days of the war that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al-Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza, we are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region will elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities. And those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels. Loud actions have been made, not only in support of the Palestinian people, but in establishing what could turn into a tangible plan to end the occupation of the Holy Land. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The International Quds Day this year comes following Israel's airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus that killed 7 Iranian military officers. This latest Israeli attack, together with over 6 months of regime's genocide in Gaza, prompted thousands of Iranians to pour into the streets across the country to mark Quds Day.
Recently, there was an incident in which we were all heartbroken and devastated, as 2 of the top Iranian generals were killed and our country's embassy was air-targeted. This act was against international and human rights law. As an Iranian and a Jew, we condemn this issue.
Quds Day is commemorated all over the world on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, the Iranian Jew community also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza. This community believes that the United Nations and the Western countries have been totally inactive over the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip.
We are not anti-Semites, but we are anti-crime, we are anti-killing, and in one word, we are anti-Zionist. And we live in peace with each other in Iran, with Jews, but we don't have any problem with Jews. We have problem with genocide, with killing, with Zionists.
We send a message to all young and free people around the world that humanity is in danger today. Hear our voice, our belief and our goal, down with Israel.
This year, the International Quds Day comes amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Israel has cut off fuel, electricity, food and water to Palestinians living in the besieged territory.
Iranians once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and also strongly condemned the recent criminal acts of the Israeli regime leading to the martyrdom of 2 senior Iranian military personnel. When it comes to violation of human rights, nobody can stay silent. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Thousands flooded the streets across Pakistan to denounce the United States and Israel for their war crimes in Gaza.
The US is a terrorist state.
Israel is a terrorist regime. They are spreading terrorism against innocent men, women, and children in Gaza through their relentless attacks. The US and Israel are using their military might to systematically oppress and kill innocent Palestinians in Gaza.
Protesters marking Quds Day voiced their unwavering solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli occupation.
Israel is a fascist and illegitimate regime that is committing war crimes in Gaza by killing innocent men, women, and children on a daily basis. The end of Israel is necessary to maintain peace in the world.
Amid chants condemning Israel and the United States, speakers criticized what they called the criminal silence of the world on Israel's war crimes in Gaza.
We demand from the governments, from the Muslim governments, especially the government of Pakistan, to take practical actions. Just lip service is not enough. Just passing resolutions is not enough. Governments should take practical steps for the security of the people of Gaza.
Quds Day is an annual event observed on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan across the world to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
International Quds Day rallies in Pakistan are a manifestation of solidarity with the Palestinians. The rallies are also a show of unity among Muslims worldwide. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Under the title Flood of the Free, thousands of Syrians and Palestinians along with regional resistance forces rallied in the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus to commemorate International Quds Day. A joint military parade was organized by the Palestinian resistance as a message of strength and determination.
The commemoration of International Quds Day this year comes after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which constituted a strategic shift in the war against the Zionist enemy. It also comes amid the legendary resilience in the Gaza Strip, under the devastating onslaught and the cohesion among all resistance movements participating in this operation.
The Yarmouk camp has witnessed violent battles against terrorism. And today, from the same liberated camp, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, and Palestine vow to keep fighting until the liberation of all occupied territories from the grip of the Israeli terrorist regime and its sponsors. After the military parade, speeches were delivered by representatives of resistance movements.
Today we commemorate International Quds Day, which coincides with the ongoing Israel attacks for the past 6 months on our Palestinian people in Gaza, resulting in a significant number of martyrs and wounded, mostly women and children. The resistance continues and will prevail, and we confirm our absolute support for the resistance both logistically and politically.
Representatives of the resistance praised the profound strategic vision of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as Quds Day. They say this vision was the cornerstone of the resistance front alliance with Palestine as its compass.
This is not from today. Since 1979, Imam Khomeini set this day for us to gather every year to the support of Palestine, liberation of Palestine from river to the sea, and also for the support for all the oppressed people all over the world.
Quds Day has proven to be more than just a celebratory occasion. It is a day that unifies people and brings them together around the Palestinian cause.
The crowds that gathered in solidarity with Gaza to commemorate this day have proven the wisdom of the Islamic Revolution in Iran by establishing an international day for Al-Quds as a constant reminder for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands of protesters have flocked to central London on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event was established by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in 1979 to express solidarity with the Palestinians and inculcate a Muslim-led opposition to Zionism. With the ongoing genocide in Gaza unfolding before the world's eyes, this year's protest has taken on extra significance and emotion. It's because people are standing up to a Zionist supremacist entity which has thus far murdered over 33,000 people while still not being able to destroy the capabilities of the resistance.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the Al-Quds rally. And this year, these lobbying efforts fall within the wider context of Zionists and their agents at the top of government trying to get all Palestine marches banned since last October. Efforts that have thus far been resisted by police and other elements within the establishment. Those on the march steadfastly reject any attempts to ban it.
It's very contradictory in a country that promotes freedom of speech around the world, human rights and democracy around the world. They want to stop people from protesting, not only these issues, but many other issues. And it's our duty as citizens of this country and the West to continue supporting through democratic means and protest the cause of Palestine.
When you look at the counter-demonstrators, they're a hopscotch of people, Zionists, far-right, British nationalists and so on and so forth, extreme-right, nasty elements of British society. They're all on that side. So if you want to ban anyone, ban that lot. We're very representative of British society, especially London society. We're white, black, green, brown, every religion, every colour you can imagine, we're all here.
I'm here to show solidarity with the people in Gaza especially who are suffering genocide, and also show solidarity with our brothers and sisters of all faiths and none who are calling upon our government to uphold international law.
The people of Gaza have won the admiration of the world with their steadfastness against this unprecedented genocide, but as they stand on the brink of a deliberate famine engineered by the Zionist entity, it has scarcely been as important for the voice of the world at rallies like Al-Quds Day to shout loudly for justice and liberation for Palestine. Isa Kadhimi, London.
Down with America, down with Israel. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. These were some of the slogans that reverberated across Indian-administered Kashmir to commemorate the International Quds Day. Thousands of people, including women and children, poured onto the streets across the region after Friday prayer in a show of solidarity with Palestinians. Holding banners and placards, the protesters condemned Israel's war crimes committed against Palestinians in Gaza Strip.
6 months of war has seen unprecedented destruction in Gaza, where houses have been knocked down and hospitals bombed. Thousands of children have been killed, relief workers attacked. The onslaught on Palestinians has shaken the conscience of humanity. This wanton killing and destruction must stop.
People cutting across religious divide have come out today to condemn Israel's genocide in Gaza. Innocent children are being killed every day. It's high time Muslim world and those who believe in humanity unite against Israel's atrocities.
The protesters denounced what they call the criminal silence of the international community over the mass killings of Palestinians. They also condemned Israeli deadly airstrikes on Iranian embassy's consular building in Syria. Since Israeli regime began its onslaught on October 7, more than 33,000 people have been killed.
I want to call on international community to play their critical role in getting Palestinians their inalienable right to life. Also, I call on the religious class of the world, including Pope Francis, that humanitarian ceasefire should be implemented in the occupied territory of Gaza and Palestinians should be given unrestricted access to the life-saving aid. And I call on Palestinian people that not only the day of Quds, we are with you every day, and call on that we will stand with you by thick and by thin.
The protesters also urged the Indian government to intervene and help restore peace in Gaza. Ever since the founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, declared the last Friday of Ramadan as International Quds Day, every year millions of people across the world take to the streets on this day to remind people of the Palestinian cause.
As part of International Quds Day, people here in Kashmir have held rallies to express solidarity with the people of Palestine amid the genocidal onslaught in Gaza. The protesters called on the international community to break its silence and unite against Israel. Said Ali Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Down
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as US-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So, for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling on Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Hours after US President Joe Biden told Israel to take concrete steps to protect civilians and aid workers in Gaza or risk losing military support from the United States, top members of President's Democratic Party ramped up pressure on the White House to go further. The progressive Senator Bernie Sanders was among the strongest voices. Bernie Sanders said Israel should not be getting another nickel in military aid until it markedly facilitates the flow of provisions into a region that the US suspects is already grappling with famine. Bernie Sanders told CNN on Thursday, 4th of April, "We're looking at one of the worst humanitarian disasters that we have seen in a very, very long time, because Israel is not allowing humanitarian trucks into Gaza, and especially into the areas where people are in most desperate condition."
Sanders added it was not the US's job to worry about how Gaza may tie into the political future of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Vermont senator added, "My view is no more military aid to Israel when children are starving in Gaza." Meanwhile, the Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland insisted that President Biden enforce a national security memorandum signed in February that aimed to condition the transfer of military weaponry to Israel on its adherence to humanitarian benchmarks. Senator Van Hollen said topping the list of policies that President Biden could leverage against Israel is the suspension of transferring offensive weapons to the occupied Palestinian territories if it fails at reducing civilian harm or getting desperately needed assistance to people in need. Democratic Senator Van Hollen alluded to the policy days after Israeli airstrikes assassinated 7 employees of the international food charity World Central Kitchen. Following the attack, a cargo ship carrying 240 tons of food destined for Gaza returned to Cyprus. The Democratic senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, said she would seek to impede the sale of F-15s to the occupied Palestinian territories after the assassination of the World Central Kitchen staffers, which included a US-Canadian citizen and 3 British nationals. A day before the World Central Kitchen workers were massacred, a report surfaced that the Biden administration was mulling an $18 billion arms transfer package to Israel that would include more than 24 F-15 fighter jets. Democratic Senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, told CNN, "We cannot approve the sale of arms to a regime that is in violation of our own laws on this, and that includes access to humanitarian relief. This is a moral question, it is also a legal question. Congress has responsibility here, and I'm willing to take that responsibility." Bernie Sanders, Senators Van Hollen and Warren are all part of a 51-49 majority that Democrats and independents who caucus with them hold in the U.S. Senate. President Biden and his administration have generally stood in steadfast support of Israel, which has struck Gaza on land and by air after the 7th of October surprise operation by Hamas. But with the martyrdom toll in Gaza climbing above 30,000 and the humanitarian crisis worsening, the United States, which provides Israel with at least $3.8 billion in security assistance annually, recently abstained from a United Nations vote, which resulted in a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. President Biden on Thursday, 4th of April, for the first time called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as well. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. World Central Kitchen has rejected as lacking credibility the findings of an Israeli investigation led by a former general into a coordinated series of Israeli drone strikes on the charity's vehicles in Gaza recently that assassinated 7 aid workers. As the Israeli occupation forces blamed a series of grave errors for the deadly attack that assassinated 3 British nationals, 3 other foreign nationals and a Palestinian colleague while delivering food, World Central Kitchen renewed its call for a full and independent inquiry into the incident. Amid mounting international pressure on the Israeli regime, the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron said the findings of the Israeli inquiry, which he said the UK was reviewing carefully, showed that major reform was required. David Cameron said on X social media platform, "It's clear major reform of Israel's deconfliction mechanism is badly needed to ensure the safety of aid workers." The hurriedly completed inquiry, which led to 2 middle-ranking officers being dismissed and a general reprimanded in the Israeli army, outlined a catalogue of failings by Israeli forces in an attack that has reinforced global criticism of Israel's conduct of a war in which more than 33,000 Palestinians have been massacred in the past 6 months. While welcoming the report as a first step, the founder of World Central Kitchen, the celebrity chef José Andrés, said the Israeli military cannot credibly investigate its own failure in Gaza. It's not enough to simply try to avoid further humanitarian deaths, which have now approached close to 200. All civilians need to be protected and all innocent people in Gaza need to be fed and safe, and all captives must be released. The charity's chief executive, Erin Gore, said, "Their apologies for the outrageous massacring of our colleagues represent cold comfort. It's cold comfort for the victims' families and World Central Kitchen's global family. Israel needs to take concrete steps to assure the safety of humanitarian aid workers. Our operations remain suspended in Gaza." World Central Kitchen's remarks were echoed by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who said fixing failings in Israel's military procedures required independent investigations and meaningful and measurable changes on the ground, noting that 196 humanitarian aid workers have been assassinated during Israel's brutal assault on Gaza. Antonio Guterres said, "We want to know why." The announcement of punishments and the apology have not calmed the international outcry over the World Central Kitchen workers' deaths or reassured international aid groups that it is safe to resume operations in Gaza, where nearly a third of the population is on the brink of starvation. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling for Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. The resolution came as Israel finally succumbed to unprecedented US pressure and opened new food corridors into Gaza. The vote by the United Nations Human Rights Council, a body that Israel reviles, marks another moment in the slow global ostracization of Israel over its war in Gaza, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. 28 countries voted in favor, 13 countries abstained from the vote, and 6 voted against the resolution, including the United States and Germany. The resolution emphasized the need to ensure accountability for all violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law in order to end impunity. It also expressed grave concern at reports of serious human rights violations and grave breaches of international humanitarian law, including of possible war crimes and crimes against humanity in the occupied Palestinian territories. The resolution follows what appears to have been a decisive phone call between Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu on Thursday, 4th of April, in which Joe Biden warned US policy towards Gaza would change if Israel continued to defy calls to alter its approach to the supply of aid to the population of Gaza.
Start. Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachoo. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
So, sister, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
How is your Iman doing? That's more important. the most important gift that you have is your iman.
Yes, I guess it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's doing fine.
What I want to ask is, this is kind of self-confidence that we have, alhamdulillah. Mm-hmm. But how certain can we really be about it?
About our confidence?
Yeah.
About
the situation in Iran is completely different to what I had to face. So when I was in school, I was constantly being bullied and harassed and, you know, pressured when it comes to Islam and when it comes to God, right? The existence of God itself. And so this is when I was back in school in England, right? And lots of the people there outside of London are very, very ignorant about a lot of things. Like, it's really, really scary, actually. They won't know the difference between a nationality and a religion. They'll think that they are the same. They'll think that if you are from England, you must be Christian. If you are from, like, they wouldn't know the difference between an Indian and a Muslim. They'd think that all Indians are Muslim. It's really, really bizarre. So I was facing that.
How come? In today?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Like, today's
world? It was shocking. Because before that, I had spent my whole life in London. But when I was around 12 or 13, then we moved to Kent, which is just outside of London. London is full of cosmopolitan people. Like, there's black people, brown people, yellow people, you know, from every walk of life. And there's lots of different religions, and everybody's living together, and they can learn from each other. Outside of London, though, pretty much everybody's white.
Yeah.
And really ignorant. Unbelievable. Anyway, so I had to really, really struggle to fight back against certain people who were really clever. Because even in that kind of society, you still have certain people who stand out. Like my history teacher, for example. Open, flagrant atheist, militant atheist. And he used to try to, you know, force this atheist ideology into the students when we were just like 11, 12.
Oh.
So I once said to him, for example, I said, "Sir, if I were to tell you that there was a jungle," you're a logical man, right? "If I were to tell you that there was a jungle and no civilization had ever stepped foot in there, no human being had ever gone in there, and yet, miraculously, all the trees cut themselves down and then they erected themselves into these beautiful houses and a village and a city was formed, but no human being ever even went inside, what would you say?" And he said, "Well, that's ridiculous. Absolutely impossible." I said to him, "Exactly. That's what you're saying about the entire universe, that it was just created by accident."
Yeah.
You get it? So he was completely silenced, and the whole class kind of erupted. They're like, "Wow, sir," because I had to face this kind of stuff. And it really strengthened my, like, core beliefs, alhamdulillah. Before I came to Iran, I had a solid conviction in Allah. I knew, like, with 100%, without a shadow of doubt, alhamdulillah, about Allah and about Islam in general. The kids in Iran are facing something completely different. And just like every society will face different things, in Iran, they're being challenged on far higher things.
Exactly.
Right? They're having to challenge. Okay, fine. We accept Allah. We accept the Islamic revolution. We accept Allah. We accept the deen. Now we're talking about forming an Islamic government, you know, and the different, you know, debates that exist there. So it's really, really different.
So there's this thing that, you know, there's two sides to each narrative, like the one who's saying it as, I mean, we all have different perspectives. Like, I for sure would think that my perspective is the truest, and this is the whole truth.
Yeah.
Like, what I'm saying is the ultimate truth, and what the other people say does not have a 1% of truth in it. Mm-hmm. But then the thing is that we must not look at things like this. Like, it's not like I am always the right person and the other people and whatever they're saying is wrong. We always must give some chances, leave some doors open for new ideas.
Absolutely.
Like, you must accept the enemies, the opponents, the adversaries' ideas, this opponent ideas, so that you could improve your own thoughts. Like, the foundation of your own thoughts must be much more strengthened this way.
Yeah, you need to be listening, really, really listening to what other people are saying.
It's actually a skill and an art to have an idea, to think that you're right, but at the same time, give a chance and opportunity for other ideas to sprout out in your mind.
Well, at the same time, we have to understand that the West has spread this idea of objective reality, that reality is, you know, relative. So, for example, between me and you, sister, right, like, there's a six. I'm going to draw a six on the floor, right? From your perspective, it's a six. From my perspective, it's a nine.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it upside down. So I saw this meme and this kind of picture, and they were saying that, look, it's relative. For this person, it's six. For this person, it's nine. But then the philosopher comes along and he says, no, the person who wrote that on the ground, they had an intention. There is a reality behind it.
And then they came with the idea of death of author. Then the intention is no matter important. In the realm of literature, like, there were different schools of thought when you criticize a work of art. We have formalism, we have structuralism, and before that we had a long history again. But what happens is that after formalism, they came with this idea.
What's formalism?
Formalism is to go for the text itself.
Okay.
Like, the text itself is self-sufficient and it will tell you everything. You don't have to go for the intention of the author and whatsoever. The text would shout and foreground itself for you. Like, you don't have to go for the intention of the author and for his or her biography or the background, whatever. Historical or cultural or religious background of the author. So you put the author aside, and then at this point there comes this idea of death of the author. But honestly speaking, I don't believe in that, because
When you just ignore the author.
Yeah, just forget about the author and go for the text and the words and the language, because language is everything. We are imprisoned in this prison house of language. Language is ruling over us.
I wish it was that simple, isn't it? You could just completely delete the author and look at the text itself.
Yeah, it's not that easy. Like, as an author, when I write something, I try to convey my meaning by words, but these words are not self-sufficient. Sometimes words are the matter of misunderstanding. Like, I mean to say something, but the words are not compatible with what I'm saying. So, now, just put that aside. I was just coming to that relative reality that you were talking about, like the objectivity of people. We all have our own perspective and point of view, but the thing is, it's like a box. You have to think outside that box sometimes, at least sometimes, and we have to develop that sort of understanding of other people's perspective as well. Like, when some person is telling me, someone is coming to me, telling me something that I would call that notion, that word, that saying as a nonsense, well, give it a second thought. Maybe it has got something to share.
Yeah. I think you also need to look at the author himself, the person who's speaking, I mean, in this context, because you don't want to listen to everybody. You should look at the purity of a person. Some people might say, look at the intelligence of a person. That's true as well. Some people might say, like, look at the honesty of a person. You know, that's true as well. But I think really what you're looking for is the purity of a person, because even a person who, a child, for example, sometimes they can say things that are just really profound. My son, he never does anything. He's just always tottering around, and he just comes over and he says, if you don't know where you are, you're probably lost. It was really profound.
So
we
profound.
All just went really quiet. We were just like, why did he just say that? You know? Anyway, my point is, carry on.
Okay, yeah, that's very true. Sometimes you get some ideas from the people you do not even count as so wise people.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Sometimes you get an idea from this friend of yours who you always thought that they are not so wise to share any idea with you.
Thank you, sister.
Among my friends, there are those whom I don't think they would come with some handy advices at some moments and in some occasions, but it happens. It happens that you get some words of wisdom from people that you do not expect from them, those words. So it's something that you have to gain by maturity. Just as we grow older, we would learn how to be flexible with ideas and do not go for it directly as subjective as you have it in your mind.
Yeah. Also, we have to remember the very, very important hadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, where they taught us, إِنَّ لِلَّهِ عَلَى النَّاسِ حُجَّتَيْنِ. Surely from Allah upon the people there are two hujjas, two proofs, undeniable, irrefutable proofs, hujjas. حُجَّةً ظَاهِرًا وَحُجَّةً بَاطِنًا. There is an external hujjah and an internal hujjah. And he said, as for the external hujjah, it is the Prophet and the Imams, عليهم السلام. And as for the internal hujjah, it is the aql,
wisdom,
the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This aql of ours, this intellect of ours, pure intellect, is always going to point us in the right direction. So there does come a point where you have to ignore what other people are saying when something is absolutely proven to you through logical, rational arguments.
But then, still, we are in that point that you should not take everything for granted. Like, you hear things and you just ignore them. Don't be like that. Even we have it as in the Holy Book of Quran that the wise people are those who listen to all the words and they would get the best of those words.
Follow the best of it. Yeah,
yeah, they would follow the best of it. So do not take anything for granted and do not look them down. Because sometimes there is a point of wisdom in the things that you hear, even though you do not think of them that way. So it's not that you're always the right person.
I think that's the best advice. You listen to everything.
Yeah.
You don't follow everything. You can't follow everything, actually. You're going to have to choose one of them.
Exactly.
One of the options.
But then follow the best according to that internal light that you were talking about.
Yeah.
According to the narrations, which is the external light. So you can choose the best of words, the best of advices in your life, and then make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this was all. Sometimes other people's are right.
Yeah.
So give a chance to other people's advice and ideas. Maybe that's the truest thing you have to do. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. This was all for today. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif. Allah, 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 Allah. Allah, Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Lines this hour. Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire kill scores more civilians in Gaza as the death toll from the regime's genocide nears 33,200, mostly women and children. The World Court begins its two-day hearings on a case brought by Nicaragua against Germany, accusing Berlin of facilitating